Species.
Unite.
Species. Unite.
So I put on the coat. I looked at myself in the mirror. I was going to a party in Brooklyn, and I just thought, you cannot go to this party like this. Like, you will be shunned, and you don't want to be this person. And I took off the coat, and I never looked back.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Novogratz. This is Species Unite. We have a favor to ask. If you like today's episode and you have a spare minute, could you please rate and review Species Unite on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts? It really helps people to find the show. This conversation is with Kim Cantor. Kim is the founder and creative director at House of Fluff. House of Fluff is a New York City-based animal-free material innovation studio, and they're an outerwear brand. And they also happen to make some of my favorite faux fur on the planet. Back in the day, in another lifetime, Kim was a creative director at J. Mendel. J. Mendel is a global luxury brand known for its animal furs. Kim's transformation is one of the best stories I've heard in a long time. I am a huge fan of House of Fluff, huge fan, and it's very cool to be here. So thank you.
Welcome.
So before we get to today and before we get to House of Fluff and before we get to any of what you're doing now, I want to go back because you have one of the better stories of someone who ended up the queen of faux fur. Let's go back because you're old school New Yorker, old school fashion industry. So will you just kind of talk first how it all started, like how you even got into fashion?
You know, I have been in fashion for over 20 years. Okay, now like my age comes out, right? And I started out at the magazines back in the day when there were magazines and people read magazines. I was at Elle. I wrote a column for the Wall Street Journal. I was at the Washington Post magazine doing the magazine section. I was a stylist. I worked with Beyonce and Jennifer Lopez and all these stars doing a lot of cosmetic gigs and stuff. And so, you know, it's very common if you're on that side of the business to then freelance for brands, right? As a sort of secret consultant, helping them know what they should be making. And so I ended up switching to the brand side and building a small luxury brand known for making the finest fur coats in the world. So I was, needless to say, the biggest fur person in New York City.
It's insane.
Like, always in a fur, right? And I just want to say, like, I grew up in the 70s, right? And in the 1970s, and anyone who's listening that's, you know, my age is going to get this, it was completely fine to adopt your pets from the Humane Society, love animals, eat meat for dinner, and your mother got a mink coat. Like, that was just all culturally acceptable behavior with no hypocrisy.
Well, when I was a little kid in the 80s, my mom sold furs, and more than once. And then at one point, we were living in Germany at the time, and she worked for this fur guy and sold furs. And my parents had never had any money. And now she could afford furs. And I was horrified, to be honest, but it was like the best thing. It was literally like she'd made it, you know, in a lot of ways. And she was so excited. And I remember she got a tanuki, which is a Japanese raccoon dog. And then later she ran the fur salon at Macy's when we moved back to the US. And I was even more horrified. But she thought it was like, I mean, that was the world.
No,
at that
it was
point.
Glamour. These were such status symbols. I mean, that, not to jump so forward to House of Fluff, but it was really important when I switched teams to try to remake some like iconic coats. I always believe that what I was really doing with House of Fluff was reinventing modern luxury, you know, to be about animal-free and innovative and sustainable products. Yeah. But for sure, at the time we grew up, right, fur was a huge status symbol.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so now you're working at J. Mendel's.
Yes, and I'm creative director, and I'm building the business, and I'm seeking, like a Roman emperor, seeking out the most exotic of all animals. One day I made a mini skirt out of bellies of an alligator. It cost like $7,000. So all this crazy stuff.
And are you thinking at the time, just because you're so in it, right? And you're like literally, it's animal product after animal product. Are you thinking like these are animal, like what's the mindset?
No, you're just thinking it's a fabric. You know, for some reason, to me, it was like either like a stuffed animal. I associated with like a plush animal.
Yeah.
Or I didn't see sadness in it. I honestly don't know why, but I just associated it with like a plush, right? You know, or something crazy like that. And it took me a really, really long time. And, you know, it started very slowly. It started with my household products and food. Wow. You know, that's how my awareness of sort of what I was putting in my body and what I was like cleaning my house with, and cosmetics. And then eventually my closet could not escape the scrutiny,
right?
You know, and one day I put on, I also had many contemporary furs, but I also would buy many vintage furs, right, to use as inspiration. And one day I was going to a party in Brooklyn and I put on my favorite fur coat. And this is horrible. I'm just going to say it though. It's horrible. Right, shut your ears if you're squeamish. I had a monkey coat.
Oh my God.
I had a long-haired monkey. It looked like long-haired goat. You know, it was very long-haired and like very rock star, but it actually was, you know, a monkey. And I put on the coat and it was my favorite coat. And I just looked at it and I loved winter. You know, I mean, any chance to wear the leopard, the ocelot, you know, I was down with it. And
how many furs did you have?
I had a lot of furs. I sold 26 of them to fund my business.
Wow.
So, yeah. I had a lot of furs. Anyways, I put on the coat. I looked at myself in the mirror. I was going to a party in Brooklyn and I just thought, you cannot go to this party like this. Like you will be shunned and you don't want to be this person. Like, and I thought, I just do not want to be this person. And I took off the coat and I never looked back. And, you know, the next day I went shopping to try to find replacements because, you know, those were my winter coats.
Yeah.
I couldn't find anything that felt chic and sophisticated and luxe. So I thought, well, I'm just going to have to make myself something. And I mentioned that to a bunch of my girlfriends, like at brunch or something 2 days later, you know, and they all turned to me and said, oh my God, if you're not going to wear fur, like make something for us. And I realized, oh my God, there's other women that feel the same way. And there's just nothing for them, no alternative for them to go to. So,
and what were the alternatives at the time? It was like a lot of like kid looking stuff, right?
And like cheap stuff, even like from Zara or something, you know, it was very plasticky feeling. And the fur just felt bad. And if it was vintage, it felt really bad, really cheap, you know? And the styles weren't right. I mean, there was just nothing. You know, I was a snob. Listen, I came out of high luxury.
Right.
I mean, I thought there's got to be something in between real fur and this bad fake fur.
Yeah.
So that became the mission.
Because there wasn't anything out there. How do you even start this then? Like, so now?
Well, so now I realize there's a marketplace, right? There's a lot of people that want this, it seems to me. So I went to the design director at J. Mendel, where I was working, who I thought was the most talented designer working with fur. And I said, Alex Dimmick is his name. And I said, Alex, I want you to make me a fur coat, but a non-animal fur coat. But actually, I think I might want to start a non-animal fur brand. What do you think? And luckily, Alex's sister had been a veterinarian. And it had been this huge thing in his family that she saved animals and he, you know, slaughtered animals to make clothes. So he was like, oh my God, yes. So as soon as I had my designer, and then we realized, well, there's no reason some of these seamstresses that we've worked with for years and pattern makers can't move over to animal free. And so then we had a staff. Then I said we needed money. So then I sold the coats to get the seed money.
That's
and
awesome.
Then we just started looking actually for fabrics. And that sort of became another huge thing, because many of the fabrics that we found being used at the time, this is 2017, were filled with polyester and modacrylic and things that were not really great for the earth.
Sure.
So that started pillar number two at the House of Fluff, which is, we know we can do this without animals, but can we do this in a sustainable way that will be making a product that also won't harm the earth? So in 2017, no one wanted to talk about any of these issues. I mean, you could barely find a recycled box or bag to send the product out in. We started making our own garment bags from canvas, you know, to send with the to send the product in, so we didn't have to use plastic.
Right.
And then, you know, you can keep it forever. I mean, it's really been a road.
They're cool bags, actually.
Yes. Yeah. So it's been a great process. But, you know, as far as launching the brand, I feel that there were many people at that moment in 2017, as you'll remember, Gucci, Versace, you know, all these big brands, heritage brands, went for free right around the time that we launched. I mean, I think there was a lot of momentum in that direction.
Yeah.
And there was, that had been a need in the marketplace that had been growing for sure. And women really responded. And I mean, men also. And I think that it was a real pivotal turning point in understanding the culture and the way we're going to move forward.
Right, right. I know that so much of the faux fur not that long ago was kind of crap, right? And but how was it, there also this push from the fur industry to like say, don't wear faux fur?
I'm so glad you brought this up, because this is one of my favorite topics. Okay, so the fur industry, for anyone that doesn't know, the fur industry is very rich, right? I mean, it's made up of these farmers all over the globe, right? And they have a lot of money. And when they started to feel threatened by people turning away from fur, they started a massive ad campaign that they basically came out and said, real animal fur is natural fur, right? And this is totally natural, and faux fur is harmful to the planet and terrible for the environment, and natural fur, natural fur, natural fur. And they put billboards in Times Square. They had ads in every magazine, which many of which were banned. I mean, the science states otherwise. Even with the faux fur having polyester in it, animal fur is still more hazardous to the earth because of CO2 emissions, because of runoff from the animal farms, you know, terrible from all of the chemicals that are used to dyeing the skins. I mean, it's really like pollutants on pollutants.
Yeah.
And never mind the animal. That's not even and touching the animal welfare issue, right, okay? Right.
So, and the disease, yes, and the COVID.
Yes,
and the,
everything. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's like you can't even compare some polyester, which is in so many clothes. But the fur people made enough noise and put that messaging out there that many people did start to believe it.
I was hiking with someone this weekend, and I was telling her that I was coming to see you. And I was talking about House of Fluff and what you're doing in biodegradable fur. And she was like, thank God somebody's doing it, because the faux fur is so shitty for the environment. Like the whole kind of spiel. And yes, you know, there's truth in, a little truth in, but it was totally coming from what you're talking about.
Like, yeah, no, it was, I mean, you know, listen, it's like the bully, you know, they had a very loud voice. It's like Trump, you know, it's like fake news. You know, if you can say it loud enough and you can say it enough times, there are people that will believe it. So yes, that was a problem. I mean, listen, I didn't want to start a brand, and I felt the big win was always creating an alternative that won on everything. Right. Yeah. So yes, we're going to save animals, but we also need to care about the earth. And we always set out to make a luxury product. I mean, listen, we came from J. Mandel.
Yeah.
We're not messing around. I mean, we're making coats from twills. We're having several fittings. These are coats that we're making in our studio. They're extremely well thought out. We actually, the first few coats all were copies of my vintage coats, pretty much. So everything was extremely thought out and was a quality product that we believe you would have for a very long time. We would be willing to take it back and make it into a pillow or a blanket if you don't want it, or a vest or something, you know?
I wore your green cape, the green furry cape, to a lunch not that long ago, and there were like 8 women there. And everyone was like, oh my God. And usually, I mean, I have a lot of faux fur because I feel like it's part of my job. You know? No, but it's like, I can say, oh, it's vegan. And then
of course, it
encourages people. But, and every single person there wanted to take photos of the tag so they could look up your stuff. Everything.
Well, that cape was actually, when I had been at Mandela, I'd made myself a mink cape. And it was, you know, it was very chic. And so there was, and I, you know, listen, I wanted to wear that cape again. So it was just like, let's make my mink cape, you know, all over again.
What was the reaction like from people who were like, knew you as this, you know, the fur woman, to now you're making faux fur? How do people respond?
I think it was, people were so intrigued by the story, and everyone that knew me just couldn't believe it. And you know, it was a great story. You know, we got lots of press. There was lots of interest. I think it was also proved to many people that there was an industry. I went to many meetings with the Humane Society and the city of New York, proving to them that the fur industry, people in the fur industry could find jobs, right? Well, in the fashion industry, because in fact, everyone that worked for us had worked in fur. So I think there were many sides of it. And I think, you know, for us, we did great things. We ended up, you know, we did all the furs for the Elton John movie, Rocket Man.
Yes,
and was so good on them that they chose to remake all of Elton's furs in faux, you know, instead of using anything real. So we did that. We had incredible celebrity asks for furs, I think, because I think no one wanted to wear real fur anymore.
No.
You know?
No.
And they just, there was nothing for them to wear that they felt good in. And all of a sudden, you know, we showed up with this luxury, cool kind of product, you know, that felt a little edgy and, you know, felt really good. And if anything, like, people would be like, well, can you put a tag on the outside of this that says it's faux fur? Because it looks so real. You know, we were such sticklers on the quality. I think there was just, it's the way of the future. And it was very organic of just putting it out there in the world and the world saying, oh yeah, like now this is what we want. And
yes,
this is what we've been missing.
Yeah.
Maybe we didn't even realize it.
Yeah.
So that sort of led us to then, okay, now let's try to figure out how to make it even more earth-friendly, even more sustainable.
Will you talk a little bit about like what's in, like, I don't understand what any of this is really made of to begin with. Like what's in, like, say, like a Zara fake fur versus, you know, your original versus where you want to go? Like, how does that shift and what's the kind of the trajectory?
So yeah, all really good questions, because these are all like mysterious, very mysterious questions. So, you know, and there are some good and bad answers. You know, the reality is you kind of have to get to good on the way to great, right? So the issue is a lot of the faux fur has polyester in it, which helps to give the fur a sheen. It helps it to be long lasting. It helps it to have fire retardancy. It helps it to have a lot of qualities. There's also another bad thing called mode acrylic, which is a similar like a polyester. Why they're bad is that they both come from a petroleum base. And a petroleum base takes like 500 years to decompose. So that is actually why they're bad. It's an afterlife issue. So we always intended to make things that would last forever. So sort of the road for us has been, we first started trying to replace it with recycled poly. It's like, okay, if we got to use it, let's not make anymore.
Right.
Right. Let's just reuse what's already in the world. Okay. That was sort of fair enough. And then it was like, okay, well, can we figure out how to make a bio-based fur? Because certain furs like hemp, if you've ever seen like a type of a fur that's made from hemp, it's completely natural. It will biodegrade. It's sort of close to fur, but it seems like, okay, maybe can we figure out a bio base for this? And that's really been the real road that we've gone down. And to date, we've figured out how to replace about 40% of what's in the fur with bio-based ingredients. We still have to add the recycled poly.
How does this happen? Like, are you in a lab?
It happens in kind of that way. I talk to scientists a lot. We're just continually trying things to try to replace as many ingredients as we can. We've been able to add or combine an additive. And, you know, listen, there are a lot of people on the eco side that don't like additives, but, you know, listen, the additive basically helps the polyester to break down to it has like microbes. It makes the microbes react and will eat the recycled polyester if it should hit a landfill or the ocean.
Wow.
So it's not perfect because there's still trace microfibers.
Right.
But, you know, it's way, way better.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, this is with kind of everything in the solutions world of everything we had, somehow everyone thinks is natural. Not everyone, but a lot of people are like, from meat to fur, our meat isn't natural. It's jacked up with antibiotics
right.
and all sorts of crap. There's nothing natural about it. There's same with the fur world, same with the leather world. Because we're so conditioned to think the old way was like this somehow very natural, organic way of doing things. And now all this future stuff is kind of scary and Frankenstein-y and all this crap. Whereas all these things, whether it be in fashion or food, all this innovation, no one's going to get it perfect. We're like in infancy in so many of these worlds.
So many things.
And like, if you ask me, if you could take out the cruelty, that's a huge win. And then taking out all these other things, take time.
No, for sure. And like I said, so we've taken out the cruelty. We're making a product. We're careful even, you know, listen, a lot of the issues is if you're going to bother to try to make something that's going to biodegrade, you better make sure you put a lining in it that can biodegrade. You better make sure that you have a zipper or snaps that can biodegrade, right? So, I mean, you know, and then don't wrap it in plastic. You know, I mean, like this is like a big thing to think about. So we're doing all of those things. We're trying to make a product that you'll keep for years in your closet. You know, nothing's going to happen to it. So keep the fur, keep it in its cloth garment bag, take care of it, wear it for many years, give it to someone, send it back, we'll make you pillows or a blanket. Or, you know, we pick up all the scraps from our workroom floor and we make these plush collectibles called Scrappies. There's a giant one over there we made for Elle magazine. And so, you know, there's like a million things you can do with, you know, we can make animal toys, you know, with the fur byproduct. And so we try to do as much as we can do. We're working on the actual textiles. You know, I think that is the huge win.
Yeah.
It's just going to take time.
Right. It's funny because when you say, oh, but back in 2017 to me feels like 7 minutes ago. It doesn't feel that long ago that none of this was really happening.
That's what's so crazy. When you think about how sustainability is just the overused word,
yes.
Right? There's this crazy amount of greenwashing. Like it's just, you know, I mean, nuts. And in 2017, when I went looking for faux fur without polyester, I mean, people like laughed in my face or just didn't even want to talk to me. And now there are many more people that want to have the conversation, but there aren't really that many solutions.
Right. But you're getting there.
I feel like we've definitely improved the composition of the product right. without sacrificing the look and the warmth.
And are other people like following you, like following your lead kind of thing? Or are other companies starting to shift toward what you're doing?
There's another mill that's been working on development of a more sustainable fur. And we use similar things, similar and different
right.
things. And I think that a lot of brands can buy fur from them. The problem is they greenwash a little bit. I mean, I mean, listen, I get it, you know, and marketing's tough and people, don't understand things and it's hard to really explain what's in your product. You have sort of limited time to do that and people gloss over it. So I would say to anyone that's listening to really be careful what you hear and to really, you know, look at the labels and to ask questions of the brands and of the retailers where you're buying the product, because I think there are people that say a lot of things and maybe don't walk the walk and talk the talk. Yeah. So,
yeah, it's like an easy cheat. Like people can cheat it.
Really, you can say anything. This is made from anything. And I think that's a real problem because you get people like me who've spent years, right? Like really to make something legitimate and really good and really proper and really earth friendly. And like already people are like, well, but I've had a biodegradable fur for 3 years and, you know, it's bullshit.
And you're like, no, you haven't. No, yeah, it doesn't exist.
Exactly. Right. So, I mean, that's definitely, there's truth in that. But that's across many fibers, I think also.
Yeah, 100%. You know? Since you had the moment of transformation in the mirror, in the monkey fur. no, but seriously.
What a dark path.
It was a dark path.
I am like repairing my karma from like way
I know.
Back
I love
in the days
that you're
repairing. Like
I love it.
I mean, this
trust
is like
me, that's
crazy.
Why I'm here. I love it. But no, since you had that moment, has it shifted your life in other ways too?
I feel like it reinforced a lot of my issues with food and made me look differently at other animal products in my life. Now, it started with me with cleaning products, believe it or not. Like I went to a talk that Tada Harper gave, do you know her?
Yeah.
And it was all about how the things we clean our house with and like deodorant and these personal products, how they could be giving us cancer and have these harmful things. That was my very first thing. And then I started then you just start looking at everything and, you know, it just becomes a process. It definitely made me more aware of what I eat.
That's awesome.
And, I mean, I think those things are very connected. I think the closet and the food is very connected.
I love your story. I love your coats. I love your hats.
Thank you very much. The hats have been great. We just made a hat for the, out of our mink. I really wanted to make like an iconic mink, you know, mink coat and everything. It just kind of is in a funny way. And we made actually a mink bucket hat for the U.S. Olympic ski and snowboard team.
You
for
did
the
not.
Olympics. Yeah,
that is
which is
awesome.
Really great.
That's so incredible.
I think that's really great too.
And I mean, if you don't count China and a couple other places, the world really is going for free. I mean,
100%. And I don't see that this will change back in any way because it's just gone too far. Like when you start to get retailers and then countries banning farming, like countries banning farming is huge. Retailers that there's no place you can sell the product, right? Like those two things are really, really huge. Never mind that the customer, you know, doesn't want to wear it, right? You know, because that can change also with messaging and trends and stuff like that. But I huge, huge change. And I also do want to say, because people ask me this all the time, if you do have a fur because you've been given a vintage fur or, you know, you've inherited a fur, whatever reason that you have a fur and you don't know what to do with it and you don't want to wear it, there are several animal charities. I think there used to be one that was like Coats for Cubs. And I think another one was like Born Free, but almost any animal shelter will take your fur, whatever, and use it for poor orphan animals, which I think is,
which
great.
I think is the best case scenario.
Best thing.
I love that. It's awesome. Kim, thank you so much for today.
Thanks for coming over. We should try on some furs.
Oh, I would love to. Why don't we? To learn more about Kim, to learn about House of Fluff, go to our website, speciesunite.com. We will have links to everything. We're on Facebook and Instagram @Species Unite. And if you have a spare minute and could do us a favor, please subscribe, rate, review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. It really helps people find the show. If you'd like to support Species Unite, we would greatly appreciate it. Go to our website, speciesunite.com, and click donate. I'd like to thank everyone at Species Unite, including Gary Knutson, Caitlin Pierce, Amy Jones, Paul Healy, Santina Polke, Bethany Jones, and Anna Kollner, who wrote and performed today's music. Thank you for listening. Have a wonderful day.